Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 100 to close at 23,358. S&P 500 down 6 at 2,578. NASDAQ Composite down 10 at 6,782. Russell 2000 small and mid caps up 5 at 1,492. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 1 basis point at 2.35%. Oil up $1.54 at $56.68 per barrel. Gold up $15.10 at $12.94.40 per ounce. It's been a wild week on Wall Street, with the biggest gain and the largest drop in 2 months after touching records a week earlier. Investors are trying to gauge whether benchmarks will continue a march to all-time highs on strong earnings and faster growth spurred by corporate tax cuts, or if they'll be pulled down due to lofty valuations, the flattest yield curve in a decade, and a sell-off in junk bonds. For the week, the Dow lost 0.3%, the S&P 500 lost 0.1%, the NASDAQ posted a 0.5 percentage point gain for the week. Yesterday, the House passed its version of a tax cut plan. The Senate's still debating its own plan, trying to reduce the 10-year debt impact below $1.5 trillion. A Reuters poll showed that nearly two-thirds of more than 60 economists said they were not confident the Trump administration would get the legislation passed this year. The biggest problem for the tax plan is that it is widely despised. The latest survey from Quinnipiac out this week found that just 25% of voters approve of the GOP tax cut plan, 52% disapprove. A majority of voters, 61%, believe the plan will benefit the wealthy. Just 24% view it as good for the middle class. With 95% of the S&P 500 companies having reported third-quarter results, earnings are on pace to grow 6.2% from a year earlier, that according to FactSet. That's up from the 3.1% growth rate expected at the end of the period. Of course, that's all part of the game of expectations that Wall Street plays. Technology companies drove much of the growth. The sector reported a 19.7% increase in earnings, the biggest contributor to earnings growth rate. If the tech sector was excluded, the overall growth rate would fall to 2.8% from 6.2%. Profits at companies that generate more than 50% of their sales outside the U.S. grew more than 13% in the third quarter. Earnings at firms that get a majority of their revenue from within the U.S. rose only 2.3%. The energy sector reported the largest increase in earnings of the S&P 500's 11 sectors at 135%. The increase a reflection of how hard the roughly two-year slide in oil prices had hit the industry. 74% of companies have reported profits above analyst expectations. That's above the five-year average of 69%. Financial firms reported the biggest decline in profits, down 8.3%. And that decline can largely be blamed on Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. Insurance companies in that sector reported 63% decrease in profits. Commerce Department reported October housing starts surged, up 13.7% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.29 million, second highest level of the economic recovery. Building permits, a less volatile series, up 5.9% at 1.3 million. Double-digit gains came from both the South and the Midwest, with at least some of that attributed to the recovery from the hurricanes. On a percentage basis, the Northeast was actually the biggest mover, up a whopping 42%, but it's also the smallest region for activity. It's possible warm weather proved to be a boost in the Northeast region. Single-family starts up 5.3%, with starts with five or more units up 37.4%. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, on Thursday rolled back media ownership regulations under the guise of trying to modernize its broadcast ownership rules and to help promote ownership diversity. The approved order eliminates newspaper broadcast and radio television cross-ownership rules, which imposed restrictions on owning multiple media outlets in the same market. Relaxed rules about local television ownership, including joint sales agreements, which allow a company to control news operations at several stations in one market, where stations would typically compete against each other, and formally requests comment on how to design and implement an FCC diversity incubator program. In other words, this is the beginning of the end of local media. The new rules are expected to help Sinclair Broadcasting move forward with a proposed $3.9 billion merger with Tribune Media, which would enable the company to reach 72% of the U.S. population. The merger must be approved by the FCC. There are also longer-term forces at work. Traditional media companies are struggling with more customers canceling pricey cable contracts, while Netflix and Amazon.com are spending billions of dollars on making shows and movies. More viewers now stream programming on smartphones or other devices, diverting the flow of advertising dollars away from the traditional media companies. And so, maybe you've noticed, now everybody's trying to buy or sell a media company. It actually started about a year ago when AT&T announced it had reached an agreement to buy Time Warner. Then things really turned upside down when 21st Century, just 3 years after trying to buy Time Warner, signaled it wanted to sell some assets to Disney. Then on Thursday, it was reported that Comcast might buy some of Fox, or Verizon might. It might even be sold off piecemeal. Hulu may be the single most important piece of Fox's pie, as Disney and Comcast look to compete with streaming services from Netflix and Amazon. Comcast currently holds a 30% ownership stake in Hulu. Acquiring Fox's 30% would give Comcast a majority holding. Disney, which also holds a 30% ownership stake in Hulu, is in the same position. Meanwhile, Charter Communications Director John Malone says four firms have talked to the cable company about a potential merger or acquisition. And of course, President Trump may or may not allow AT&T to buy Time Warner. Meanwhile, Meredith Corp is considering a bid for Time Inc., and Discovery Communications is acquiring Scripps Networks Interactive. But wait, there's more. The Federal Communications Commission will drive a stake through its own net neutrality rules roughly this time next month. Net neutrality is the concept that the Internet should be an even playing field, whether it's your cousin's blog or Google. Net neutrality proponents argue all data should flow the same, meaning no particular persons or companies can be favored by the networks on which the data flows. That keeps big companies from paying for preferential treatment. This is how the Internet is generally operated. But as more services move online, concerns have grown that Internet service providers will want to start charging for better access. Net neutrality supporters argue that this would turn the Internet into a pay-to-play world, hampering innovations and leaving people to the whims of major companies. The rules could be voted on by mid-December, leaving the door open for Internet providers to begin manipulating traffic. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai has made no secret of his wish to undo the benchmark rules. Pai has been working to repeal the FCC's net neutrality rules since the start of his time as chairman. Pai floated initial rules in May, which led into the usual comment period that FCC rule changes go through. That process was a disaster for the FCC, and there have been lawsuits that followed. There appears to be almost unanimous support, with the exception of some telecom companies, for keeping existing net neutrality rules. Elon Musk built a truck, a big rig. It's all electric. It does not drive itself, but the Tesla Semi is equipped with enhanced autopilot. The big reveal was last night in California. The truck has a 500-mile range, roughly twice what Reuters claimed in August. It's also more than double what Cummins and Daimler have promised so far in their planned electric trucks. That figure and the promise of solar-powered megachargers to give 400 miles of range in 30 minutes, supplementing the existing supercharger network, should help put to rest concerns that an electric truck is impractical for hauling outside of cities. For Tesla, this was a fundraising event, looking for pre-orders, and it looks like some of the big trucking firms were ready to buy. Walmart pre-ordered 15. J.B. Hunt also placed an order. Here's the sales pitch. Electric trucks can go for 1,000,000 miles before requiring a major overhaul. The operating cost, $1.26 per mile versus $1.51 per mile for a traditional diesel. And they can be linked in a convoy, dropping the cost down to 85 cents a mile. The big question is whether Tesla can build the trucks before they run out of money. The actual production is proving to be quite a challenge for Tesla. And then after the big truck display, Tesla also unveiled a new version of its Roadster, a sports car, which comes with a $200,000 price tag. Elon Musk boasted of the Roadster's 0 to 60 mile per hour time of 1.9 seconds, top speed of at least 250 miles per hour, and it comes with a 650 mile range. That's Los Angeles to San Francisco and back in one charge, a significant milestone for an electric car. And in today's edition of Banks Behaving Badly, Swiss Financial Markets Authority FINMA has found that the Swiss subsidiary of U.S. investment bank J.P. Morgan broke anti-money laundering rules. FINMA ruled on June 30th that J.P. Morgan Switzerland had seriously infringed regulatory oversight provisions. The case involved a violation of obligations of diligence on questions of money laundering. Both FINMA and J.P. Morgan declined to comment on the ruling, and it was unclear what action, if any, the regulator had taken against J.P. Morgan. FINMA is not authorized to levy fines, but may confiscate unlawfully realized gains. It's important to remember that J.P. Morgan is a really big bank, and with hugeness comes the inevitable slips and blunders, but it must take some real effort to get busted for money laundering lapses by the Swiss. That's just sloppy. Dow Industrials down 100 at 23,358. S&P 500 down 6 at 2578. NASDAQ down 10 at 6,782. As always, follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, and the daily blog, eatthebankers.com.